between pre-Pesach and tax season, this is going to be, I think, understandably and appropriately for me, our last class before Pesach, but I do hope to resume, if not immediately, then shortly after Pesach. How far we'll go into the summer, I'm not sure right now. Keeping pace with last year, we're on pace, which would mean six more shiurim in terms of last year we had 20, and this year so far this is our 14th shiur together. And because we're going to have a little bit of a break, even though we're going to not be able to do all the details, I do want to cover the remaining psukim of the parak so that we are really ready to begin a whole new chapter, literally, but perhaps even more importantly, figuratively, when we start back after Pesach. The end of the Gan Eden experiment and experience is what we'll finish tonight at the conclusion of Parak Gimel, and as we will begin Mirtz Hashem after Pesach, Parak Dalet, not only do Adam and Chava find themselves out of Gan Eden, but they now find themselves as parents and with a family. Wouldn't you know it, with children come nachas and other things which are not so envious, and certainly Adam and Chava are a paradigmatic example of that. And that begins the second chapter in the life of in the human history. So that will be for then. I hope that constitutes your official preview of coming attractions. But let's return now to our story, and as I've entitled tonight's shiur, Life After Sin. We've concluded with last week's shiur, the actual punishment not only of the Nachash, not only of Chava, but now the punishment of Adam HaRishon. We are now ready in Pasuk Chaf Aleph. To continue, to continue with the story. And it is notable, if you take a look in your Chumashim, even though in two psukim at the end of Chaf Aleph, there's a break, which is not the end of a parsha from the biblical perspective. These two psukim, actually, there is no break. What is the message that the Torah is clearly sending us? That these two psukim are the conclusion, really, of that story. And what does the Torah tell us immediately after learning about Adam's punishments? Yikra Adam Shem Ishto Chava. Until now, we've just been calling her Chava, but that wasn't her name. And now, says the Torah, Adam gives her name of Chava. Why? Ki Haisa Eim Kol Chai. She is the mother of all that is living. Any questions you want to ask on this pasuk? Good. So if she is the mother, what's the word for mother? Chayot or Chai. She should be called Chaya, right? The popular Hebrew name. Yeah. Chaya. So why Chava? Good. That's a good question. Number two.
Why did he wait until this point in time to name
good.
Her?
Number three.
And why is the past grammar that she was the mother of all living when they haven't had...
Okay. I don't have an answer to that one even, but that's a good one. Number four. Doesn't she have a name already? She wasn't anonymous until now. He's Adam, she's Isha. We've been calling her that the whole time. So what's the relationship between those two names? Okay, good. So those are at least four or five. Maybe we could even come up with one or two more questions just on this puzzle.
Isha is kind of a dependent existence, and Chava is maybe an independent, somewhat more independent.
Okay, that's an interesting possibility.
Isha means his wife.
Okay, well, we'll come back to it. It's a good possibility. We'll come back to that and think about it then. Continuing the puzzle, Chav Aleph, Vayas Hashem Elokim L'Adam Uli Ishto. If you're right, Ellie, we go back to the qualified definition in the immediate following pasuk. She's now just known as his wife. She got her name, but she's not even going to use it in this pasuk. Adam and his wife, Hashem now makes for them kesones or garments of skin of or v'yal bishem, and he clothed them. So, questions. Think basic and think.
Where did it come from?
Where did it come from? And, even more basic.
Why?
Even more basic. That's already fancy. Why is a fancy question? What's more basic? What? What is Ksonis or what does that mean? Where did it come from is going to be connected to, first we need to know what it is, then we can know where it comes from. And we also want to know why, in the sense, I'm not sure if this is what you meant, Ethan, but you could ask, well, didn't they have Alei to Einah? They weren't,
right.
They had something to wear, right?
And,
okay, so these are some good questions right off the bat. Continuing, Pasuk Chav Beis. A very important milestone because, as you know, this was my Bar Mitzvah Parsha, and I got to breathe. this is the end of an aliyah. But now it's I'm dreading it again because I have to start again. Revi'i. V'yomer Hashem Elokim. Hashem announces. The question everyone would be to who? Hein ha'adam haya ka'achad mimenu. Now this is hard for me to translate because it seems to be machlokes in the mafarshim how to translate it. And in fact, I have two different versions of the Arsul Chumash. The one that you have, I think, or not the stone actually, I have a different one. A different precursor to the stone Chumash, and I have this Chumash Rashi, and they actually translate it different ways based on the different Mepharshim. How would you suggest translating this phrase?
Like the unique one among us.
That's no way. I don't believe you. Okay, at least you were honest when I caught you. That was not the way anyone, I think, would have translated it on their own. Yeah. Yes, but that is how some versions of the Chumash translate it, like the unique one among us. So in that case, who are the us? Who are the us?
Us
are the angels. The unique one among us presumably would be Hashem vis-a-vis the angels. How does the Stone of Chumash translate it? Same way? Like the unique one among us?
The unique one among us.
Okay, so this Seferstein, not the stone, but the Seferstein edition of the Yard Scroll, says, behold, man has become like one of us. Now, the upshot of that, I don't think is too different. I don't know if it means anything that much different, but it is interesting, and we'll see it inside. I'll show you the Mefarshim. They do debate. These two translations are not in the luft. They're not coming out of nowhere. They're based, actually, on different comments made by the Mefarshim. And in whatever unique way that is being attributed to Adam and Chava, they have this special quality. What is that quality? L'da'as tovara. Right? They've eaten the tree of knowledge, and there is a result. We knew there would be a result. So now they have this this result, v'ata with an ayin, and now, pen yishlach yado, we are worried that what will he do? He already ate one tree. What might he do again? V'lachach gam mi'etz ha'chayim. There's a second tree. Maybe he'll take from that. V'achal v'chay la'olam. Questions?
What's the problem?
What's wrong? Good. And first of all, before that, what's implied? I didn't. This is not sort of a question.
He wasn't already going to live.
Well, that's true. So, but what's implied? That's true also. But I want to even more basic, just to get out, just shot in the pasuk. What's implied? What's all this trying to explain? And therefore, right? That's the next pasuk of Gimel. Therefore, we need to kick him out. That's why he's going to have to be evicted. Now that he is Yodea Tov Vara, now who knows what kind of mischief he could get himself in if he remains, right, in the toy store? We need to take him away. There's too many goodies. There's too much attractive things here. Apparently, the knowledge, L'dasa Vara, is manageable outside the garden. It's too dangerous if he remains inside the garden. Now, aside from the why of what's so bad about it, let's ask the question in a different way. Was he ever prohibited from taking the Esa Chaim? No, only the Esa Das was prohibited. So what has changed? Apparently, until he had taken the Esa Das, Esa Chaim was okay. Now that he had the Esa Das, Esa Chaim... Interesting, very interesting. We won't have a chance to answer all these questions today, but we're going to try to answer as many as we can. Chav Gimel. So what's the result? Yishalchehu Hashem Elokim miGan Eden, and therefore Hashem banished him from Gan Eden, from miGan Eden, la'avodas adama, and now he has to work the land, asher lukach misham, from which he was taken. Questions? What do we need to understand about that possible? Yes.
Seems like this is all relating only to Adam, and that it's not relating to Chava as well being
right.
Kicked out of Gan Eden.
Right, which of course she was.
Course
I'm not sure I have an answer to that, although the part about working, that's specifically his punishment, so maybe that would explain that part.
Is punishment. I think the Esa Chayim is also due to punishment. God told him he's going to die now. He's going back to the earth. So he can't put him in a situation where God's not going to be able to affect the punishment that he's supposed to take.
Okay.
The same thing, Levodot Adam. Can't do it in
Gan
Eden either.
Right. Right. So why?
Was already there.
Right. Good. Good. Very good. What does Asher Lukach Misham mean? What do you think that's referring to?
I guess from the Adama. Mm-hmm.
Anything? Any specifics? We'll see. I think that is there are some Mefarshim who see something even deeper hidden in that.
Yeah.
Something deeper.
The problem, basically, Rabbi, with this Esa Chaim is controlled by Hashem, and if Hashem wanted to, didn't want him to live. I mean. Why would the eating the Esa Chaim? Hashem could have turned it off like this here. I mean,
but you know what? It's a good question, but I could ask it even better, which means I don't have an answer for either. But I could ask it even better, which is that if Hashem didn't want them to have the result of the Eitz HaDaas, he could have turned that off also. But he doesn't. Don't eat from it. If you do, you'll have this, whatever this means, L'das Tov V'Ra. And when they did eat it, he did take it away from them. Hashem, so to speak, lived with the result. Now, we have not, part by circumstance, part by design, and I'm not sure if either part was correct or not, but we did not spend what I would consider sufficient time or specific time really examining what the Eitz HaDaas created or what L'das Tov V'Ra means. We referenced it a few different times, but there's long Rambam Zemar Nevuchim and Ramban. It's very, very complicated. But either way, the point, I think, though, is whatever the reason is, one thing I think remains clear is that Hashem implanted certain powers or potentials in these trees. Hashem wanted Adam to or not to eat from them. And if Adam reacted as the way he did against what he's supposed to do, Hashem may punish him for it. But Hashem did not, so to speak, intervene into what would have been the natural course, which is that if there are certain results from eating these fruits, these trees, and Hashem was not going to take them away. So he didn't take it away from when he ate Eitz HaDaas. However, apparently he couldn't have, so to speak, or he wouldn't have had Adam eaten from Eitz HaChaim either. So Hashem realized the age-old adage, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So rather than worry about, he'll eat from the Eitz HaChaim and what's going to be, he just said, you know what, let me put him in a situation where he can't eat from the Eitz HaChaim.
The emphasis on these before is on the goof of Adam. I mean, Adam was created with a nishmas chayim.
Right.
That supposedly lives after.
And I think the answer is because that's not affected. Or whatever Eitz HaDaas means, I think that probably affected the Neshama Shabo, and that's not punished, that's not taken away, that is going to be in a different circumstance and it's going to have different trials because the body is living in a different place. But the punishment, I think you're making a good point, the punishment doesn't affect the soul.
Yeah, the tzukim seem to focus
on right, because that's the only thing that's getting altered. The circumstances in which the guf finds itself is now altered. The Neshama is in the guf, and that doesn't change.
That doesn't change.
The essence of Adam is still the same. Let's continue. Pasuk Chav Dalet. Let's conclude the perek. I hope someone brought donuts. Vayigaresh es ha'adam. Man is evicted. What is it's a harsh term, vayigaresh, because we know what does it bring in our mind? What does the Torah refer to with the same shoresh? Right, divorce. Right, that's a harsh term, vayigaresh. It's not just to leave, it's to be severed, to be evicted.
It would seem to be redundant, right?
Yes, that's a good point. Harry, I was going to mention it. And the Mefarshim, I don't think we'll address it so much tonight, but there are Mefarshim who explain this more as a parenthetical comment to avoid the obvious redundancy. If you would explain it as just a sequence of events, then this is not a new event. That's correct. By Yeshkein Mikedem LeGan Eden, and he is stationed at the east of Gan Eden, so apparently there was, I guess, on the west, some kind of an entrance. I think Rashi alludes to this. The geography of Gan Eden, it's not my topic tonight at all. But what is he placed there? Just, again, we're not going to get into this. This we will not have time to get into, but it's just fascinating imagery. As a kruvim. There were these type of kruvim. We know the kruvim from the parshas we're reading now, right? On the Aron. There were these cherubs on top of the Aron in the base. But this is apparently other types of kruvim because these are Power Rangers, as my son would say. The Eis Lahat HaCherev, Hamesapachas, excuse me. They have the blade of a turning sword. Exactly what this means, I have no idea. Lishmor Es Derech Eitz HaChayim, to guard this way to enter into or to return to Eitz HaChayim. Right? What is important is not even all the other good things in Gan Eden. The main thing is that paradise lost. Adam is never able to get back to what he lost when he is evicted. Okay. Let's, now that we've seen the overall sequence of the psukim and we've raised some questions, let's go back, and while we can't cover it all, let's try to see what answers we can give to at least some of the questions and see some of these issues and how they are addressed by the Meforshim. Yes?
What purpose could there have been to the Eitz HaDaas in as much as until they ate from the Eitz HaChaim, until they ate from the Eitz HaDas, the Eitz HaChaim was transparent to them. In other words, they were already in the state that the Eitz HaChaim could have given them. Which is why when they ate the Eitz HaDas, they were forbidden from getting to the Eitz HaChaim, because that would have brought them back to where they
were. You're explaining why it's only now.
The whole purpose of the Eitz HaChaim to begin with. In other words, they were already there.
Right. So there are those, I saw it, I didn't put it on the sheet, and I can't remember who said it now, but I did see mentioned today, someone said that the Eitz HaChaim was the Torah. It wasn't really Eitz HaChaim, it was the Torah. And that relates actually to the fact that I think I mentioned a while back that the drusha Rabbi Lamb gave, I think I mentioned this earlier this year, I think it was, in his investiture when he became president of Michigan University, he mentioned he asked the question, what, if you would imagine that Torah would be compared to one of the trees, yeah, which one would you have expected? Torah is an open body of knowledge. You would have expected Eitz HaDas. So he explained, based on a Zohar, that what it was trying to say is it, because the Zohar says that the Eitz HaDas was Ilana Demasa, the tree of death. And what he understood that homiletically to mean is if you separate knowledge from life, meaning if you keep knowledge in the ivory tower and you don't use it to inform life and the way we live, then knowledge is worth nothing, and if anything, it is a sam hamavis. But it's only when you combine the two and you have the das informing the chayim that you really have a true Eitz HaDas. And I don't think he mentioned it there. He may be aware of it, but I think I was at the Rebbeinu Bechai. We mentioned on that first shir when we got to those trees and the commandment to Adam, I discovered for the first time, I never knew this before, it was one Mepharsh, I think it was Rebbeinu Bechai, who said that they were really into it with one tree. Right? That it was intertwined. Which would actually, I think I mentioned then, would have been more beautiful, is a beautiful metaphor and image in light of Rabbi Lamb's explanation. So there's a lot here. Yes, or Masha Kosov Khan, do I know and have I taught you? So there is more. Consider it prodding for independent study. Okay? Let's see. Back to again. We're up to Pasuk Chof. So first, Rashi. Let's see Rashi. Rashi tells us what's going on. And it's surprising. Why are we doing this now? Why is Chava getting her name now? Why not before this? And I don't think Rashi explicitly mentions this, but I think perhaps in light of the fact that there is no new parsha here, the psukim are continuous and contiguous, perhaps this Rashi is relevant. So Rashi tells us... Yeah, I don't think so. Pasuk Chaf, says Rashi. Chazer ha-kasuv le'inyan ha-rishon. Yes, says Rashi. Until now, we almost had a parenthetical, an important parenthetical, but a parenthetical story with the snake. But really... Well, this was actually a continuation of the theme that we had started way back when, which was what? Vayikra Adam Shemos, right? Don't you remember? Way back when, right? 4 or 5 shurim ago, right? 1.5, 2 months ago, Adam was giving names to everything. Then we had this whole sideline with the snake, and now that the snake's over, we're going back to naming. The one thing that hadn't been named yet was Chava. Now you'll ask, and that's the case, what's the obvious question? Why take a break? Why insert the story of the snake in between? So Rashi continues. Lo hifzik ela lamedcha. The reason that we had this interruption, this parenthetical comment, was to teach us shaidei kriyas shemos nizdavga lo chava. It was through this process that the shidduch between Adam and Chava, or really more precise would be the need or the creation of Chava, occurred. After all, the pasuk says, "Lo Adam lo matza eizah kanegdo." We spent time studying this, but only when Adam went through the entire creation and named them, and we said that the naming then wasn't just arbitrarily, okay, you're Tom, you're George, you're Sam, you're Sandy, you know, and you're Alice, but rather it was getting to the essence of each of the creatures. So then when he went through all of creation and he perceived the essence of every single creature, and he realized, there's nobody for me. In our essence, in our neshama, there's no one who's compatible for me in the way that all the animals have somebody for each other, themselves. And that was why, lefichach, it was only after that, only afterwards Hashem said, then the next thing is he fell asleep, and then Chava is created. Now, once that happened, you never know, life has all sorts of domino and unintended effects. What happened then? Well, Adam wakes up, he sees, and all of a sudden now he has Chava. And once that happened, Yushneim Arumim. And what happens? Naked man wakes up and sees naked woman. And therefore, that led to what? Not only them desiring each other, but remember, there was someone peering through the window who also thought Chava was beautiful. Samach lo parshas ha-nachash, right? We saw this reference in the Medrash before, that the snake desired Chava lo-hodiyacha, shevitoch shirai arvasa. When the snake saw Chava unclothed, ra'osam asugim b'tashmish, he saw Adam and Chava intimate together, this avela, he desired her. U'balei b'machshava b'mirmazu. And then he said, ooh, let me have this plot where I can seduce her, get Adam, knock him off, right? He said, as old, the oldest story in the book. Man covets woman, man kills out competition, right? And then man gets caught and gets killed himself, so to speak. Right? That's how it ends. So it's interesting, fascinating story. And Rashi says, that was how one thing led to another, and boom, what you know, human history is, world history is changed. But let's not forget, you know, we were still in the middle of naming, and we never got to finish that story. So we go back, and we name Chava. That is the first, I think, important perspective that Rashi lends to us. Now, the next question we want to ask, which I asked before, is, didn't she have a name? The Torah keeps on referring to her as something. What's the name? Isha, or Isha, usually with the Hayyadiya, or without Isha. So what's the relationship between Isha and Chava? So Eli mentioned one thing. It's not so different, but I think a little bit different than what the Radak says. Take a look at the first source on your sheet. The Radak says, V'yikra Adam, kishuv'a lefanav, but she is brought before him. And remember, that's deliberate term by the Radak, because the Torah had said that all the animals had been brought before Adam so that he could name them. Karala Shem, Poshe Karlo Behema L'chaylov, she named her like any other thing else that he was naming. So now we get to our point though. V'zeh Hashem Shekarala Hushem HaMiyuchad La. She is the first one to get a particular or personal name. Kishem HaKlali Kvar Zachru. The name of her species, that's already mentioned, Ha'isha. So Isha, says the Radak, means female or woman. Just like there's elephant, there's bird, right? But Adam didn't say, okay, you're Tommy the bird, and you're Nick the parrot, and you're Ernie the elephant. He just said elephant. And earlier he had just said woman. But now they have a more human, direct, personal relationship. And it is Chava, her shame prati. Now, I would add, based on this Radak, but I wouldn't read this into the Radak, this is homiletic rabbi speaking, that perhaps, again, just like the names imply a certain essence, we saw that until now, so not only is Isha represent a certain essence, but a particular name, in this case Chava, we'll see in a moment what the Torah says it implies, but the very fact that the name is happening, why now? I couldn't give her the shame prati earlier. So I would suggest that the level of intimacy, emotional connectedness that two people have, especially a husband and a wife, so Eino Doma, you cannot compare that to, so to speak, A, the beginning of the relationship to the end, or more importantly, when things are going smooth is one thing. But when you go through trial and tribulation together, so you come out of that with a much greater awareness of each other, much more profound. Sometimes it breaks a relationship, but this is a classic example, that which doesn't break or kill you will only make you stronger. And certainly it's true about the relationship. Right? If you can survive the stress, so then you actually have a much more intimate connection. And perhaps, again, just homiletically speaking, perhaps, no one throwing anything at me yet, that note on the record, no one throwing anything at me, perhaps that's now, the shame prati, only now are they so connected, does he have such a connection with her, does he perceive her in such an intimate and close personal way, that it's not enough, or it's not just, oh, she's a woman, but she is Chava, which is obviously a much more personal way of referring to someone. That is the Radak's explanation.
But it's a nice way to refer to her, in the sense that he just went through this, he used to have, theoretically, depending on who you believe, you know, which was shown in whatever, he got thrown out of paradise because of his wife.
Okay, I agree with you, but I want to point out, depending on which mafarish, it makes her worse. But according to none of them, is she a complete innocent?
No.
If she tricked him, it's even worse. But even if she didn't, it's still her fault.
But yet, if you look at her name, so now he knows the true essence of his wife, and he's giving her a name,
right,
and he gets to her essence, and in a sense, he's still using something which is very kind.
If I'm not mistaken, I didn't have a chance, I saw this quoted, but again, since I still yet haven't bought, maybe between now and the next year, I think that's what Rav Hirsch says. I have a little note, Rav Hirsch. That's exactly what Rav Hirsch says. Exactly. Beautiful. Exactly. He could have been upset at her. He could have given her a derogatory name. And yet, he still sees the great potential and blessing in her. But even though, in a sense, death has now come to the world, but the reality in the new world order is, how does people live on? We live on through our progeny, right? So who can provide us with that? Woman, right? Woman is, as the Torah continues, aim kol chai.
And Hirsch also answers why it's Chaya, not Chava. He says that Chava alludes particularly to a spiritual life and not just a physical life, that she will see to the spiritual nurturing of.
Okay, good.
Life.
Very good. I didn't know that. That part I didn't know. Okay, good. I really got to buy one. That's like the third time, right, in the last few weeks that I've said that. Very good. Let's go back now and see what Rashi says about the actual name, because I was going to get to that. So why Chava? Why the name Chava? Let's look at Rashi. Rashi says it, again, as we saw already from Rav Hirsch, in a very positive way. Rashi says Chava, Nofal al Lashon Chaya. It's, you know, a modification of the basic word of Chaya, meaning living. Of course, that begs the question, which we may or may not answer, why not just call her Chaya? So we just heard what Rav Hirsch said. Rashi continues, Shemechaye es v'lodo seha. She gives life to her children. Kasher Tamar. And now Rashi alludes to where Chava, what's the derivation of the Vav from the Yud? Kasher Tamar, just as you might say, Mehove l'adam. What is there for man with the word Hove? Vilshon Hoye, as is the form of Hoye is. So just like the relationship between Hove and Hoye, so too Chaya and Chava. So that's just kind of almost a grammatical point. The Rashi is obviously a little bit more exciting. But you see from Rashi already, he's trying to explain, he's sensitive to the issue, but the bottom line for us is he's explaining why it's a modification of the word Chaya. And again, the idea is of the aim of Kol Chai, that she gives life. Rashi seems to focus, I think, if you take it literally, on physical life, although perhaps it's room to interpret what we saw from the name of Hirsch as well, a spiritual life. Take a look at the second source on your sheet, the Bereishis Rabbah. It's interesting, there's a lot of other versions of this in the Midrashim, all along the same line, positive, beautiful, Hirsch's twist. Just as a record to balance out the sources, there is one Bereishis Rabbah which throws cold water on everything we've seen until now, and that is this one little phrase in this Bereishis Rabbah. There's other opinions. This is not, I wouldn't call this a majority opinion, but since it's out there, I would mention it to you. But Yikra Adam Shem Yishto Chava says the Medrash in this opinion, Nitna Lo Lachtioso. She was given to him. She was created to be his partner to bring him life, whether it means to give him the essence of fulfillment and or to have children. And what happened instead? Umiyatsaso ke chivya. Chivya is Aramaic for nachash. And instead, she gives him the advice of the snake. She gives him death. So everything we saw until now was this positive, beautiful, despite the pain, despite the difficulty, they've come through it together, stronger, beautiful, and that is a predominant view, I think. But it is worth noting that the Medrash actually says, well, maybe there was still a little bit of bitterness that he harbored towards her. And maybe they're both true. It's possible, I've said this certainly in other contexts, dealing with people and or couples, we often exist on multiple planes, and they're not necessarily a contradiction to one another. So,
the pshat wouldn't support that.
Well, Aim Kol Chai doesn't have anything to do with...
you say Ches Hei and...
Anyway, I'm not arguing for this opinion. I'm just letting you know that it's out there. Maybe. Yeah. Well, that's where the Medrash is coming from. It's saying, you know, it's not peculiar. It's on purpose. Yes. And that's this opinion in the Medrash says. Exactly. That's why I'm sharing it with you.
We use Chava all the time.
Don't mention it to anyone you know with that name.
Yeah.
She won't appreciate it. Okay. Let's continue. The next issue I want to see is, so now they get clothed. So we ask, number one, what is this new clothing, this Ksonis Or? Number two, we ask, why do they need it? Weren't they clothed already? And then we'll see perhaps even a third issue that the Mepharshim are sensitive to. So in terms of what is it, so we're probably all familiar with, but let's see it inside anyway, the famous opinion quoted by Rashi. Rashi says, Ksonis Or, and again, you have to realize what's the sensitivity. Think about, if you can, as we're reading this, what's the sensitivity? What's the nuance? What drives this opinion that Rashi here is quoting? So he's quoting the Midrashim, and there are many, many Midrashim on this issue. Yeshu Divrei Agada. There are many, many Midrashim, says Rashi. Some say Omrim Chalakim Kitziporen Hayu. It was very smooth, like fingernail. It was like this layer above their natural skin, which was kind of like what we have as fingernails. We only have it on the tips of our fingers. They had it now over their whole body. Smooth like a fingernail, medubakim al oran. It was stuck to their skin. Right? It doesn't sound like the type of thing you took off when you took a shower. This was now a new body coat, so to speak, of a fingernail. This is the famous idea. You know, most of the kids learn this in school, and this is what's quoted here.
It was a physical.
Sounds like it. They sprouted this kind of
body itself.
Yeah. Listen, we take it for granted. It's on our fingertips, right? But why couldn't this be anywhere else? Something like it, but again, very fine and thin, just like our fingernails, to protect them, a protective body coat.
Huh?
That is only because of what you're used to, Harry. There's no objective reason why this can't be. That's what you're used to. There was no Yal B'Shem before this. This is all the first time. You can't interpret this in light of what we're used to. Right? You have to try to imagine it at the moment. So that is, just think about for a moment, again, we'll see, when we get to the next opinion, how that's understanding the word ksones or. Right? How does that use the word or? Then says Rashi another opinion, the Yesh Omrim, there are those that say, Dover Habba min ha'or. They were actual tunics or clothing, the kind of clothing you and I think of, which were made of something which comes from skin, but not human skin necessarily, but rather kigon semer ha'arnovim, like the wool or the skin of rabbits. Shuhurach, it's very soft, cham, but can also keep you warm. Asalahem kutanos mimenu, and he made garments out of them. Two very, the real clothing or this super duper fingernail shield. Now, in terms of just, we shouldn't just think these are arbitrary. You know, throw two things against the wall, maybe they'll both stick. It's interesting, Mizrahi points out that it's really a question of how do you understand the phrase ksones or. So the first opinion, how do you understand this phrase of ksones or? Thank you. According to the first opinion, it's garments stuck to the skin. And that's the derivation of this nail that's on the skin itself. Whereas Rashi himself kind of said, when it came to the second opinion, it's coming from skin, i.e. animal skin, leather, hide, they're well familiar with. Now, those are just two interesting opinions, and it's good to think about where they came from in terms of the text. I did come across, for the first time today, an opinion in the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. Before you ask me where did he know this from, why did he say this, the answer is that is already, I'll tell you, I don't know. But after I saw this in the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer itself, I then saw that the Radak quotes this Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer as well. Take a look at what he says here. It's in the context of the fact that we knew they were already clothed, remember? Rabbi Shua ben Karcha, remember the pictures? I brought it, that was my show and tell, I brought in my pictures, right? Me and the tunic. Rabbi Shua ben Karcha, Omer, min ha'ilon, shitchap'u tachtov, lachu alim, tafru, right? They had the big leaf, which they sewed around their private parts to give them some basic coverage. And that's the pasuk that we saw earlier. Rabbi Uloi, Omer, min ha'or, now we have this later stage in history, after the chait, min ha'or, shehivshit ha'nachash, lakach ha'kadosh baruch hu, asalem, ksones or, v'yal b'shem. From the skin that the snake shed, Ad Hashem took and fashioned, right? Why a rabbit? What's the point of the rabbit? I mean, there was presumably a rabbit running around. What does that got to do with the story? So therefore, says the Pirkei Eliezer, it didn't stem from some other animal. It came from the skin shed by the snake. Now, where he got it from, there's no proof. There's nothing.
Yeah, that's very nice.
But the symbolism here is beautiful.
The skin is very much like the nails.
Right, so first, okay, that's interesting. Right, obviously, if you're talking about that was shed, it's obviously very thin. Right, that's not such thick skin, the skin the snake shed, that's true. Secondly, I think, again, homiletic rabbi speaking here, the symbolism is very, very powerful. again, in a certain sense, parallel to that one opinion that saw that, you know, maybe Adam had a little bit of a longer memory than we would have liked. He remembered a little negativity. So here, it's like Hashem, on the one hand, he's clothing them, and we'll see in a moment, but the Mepharshim stressed the great chesed and love Hashem had for them. On the other hand, you know, of all the things he could have chosen, I don't want you to just, don't forget too quickly. You know, now you have some warm clothes, but there's a reason you need the warm clothes, and you'll never forget that, because I'm giving you the clothing of... Can you imagine if that's true? Again, it's hard to know, but let's say the Prickly Ezra is right. Just think about that for a moment. That they walk around the rest of their life, with the clothing of the snake that got them into that mess. I mean, a constant reminder. Very, very powerful. Again, I don't know if it's true, but very, very powerful.
It works very well with the gracious Rabba, you know. They put on their coats that God made for them, and he looks at her and he says, Chivya.
Right, you put the two together, right? Maybe that's one came before the other. Could be. That's also true. Yeah. Interesting. Very, very interesting. Okay, now, the next part of the continued conclusion of that pasuk, or the other point, I should say, mentioned in the pasuk, is not just that he made them the kusnos or, but how does the pasuk continue? Conclude? Vayal bishem. And he clothed them. So a number of comments are in order. First of all, this actual phrase and pasuk particularly form the first example in one of the most famous and important Gemaras that any of us have. Really, one of the backbones of our entire hashkafas hachayim, our entire philosophy of life, is a Gemara in Maseches Sota. It's the fourth source on your sheet, which gives numerous examples to make its very profound point. The first one being the one that we just read. The Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Chama, Rabbi Chanina." What does the pasuk mean in Devarim when it says "Achrei Hashem Elokeichem Telchu"? You should follow after, walk after God. Can you really walk behind Hashem? After all, the pasuk says he's an ish kochla, right? It's a burning fire. You get too close to God, he'll be zapped up. So rather, says the Gemara, it means something more metaphorical and more important. Rather, we have to walk after midosav shelakadosh baruch hu. It doesn't mean walk in the literal sense, it rather means imitate in the ways of Hashem. Mahu malbish arumim. Just like Hashem clothes the naked. And how do you know that God does that? Tichsiv, our pasuk. V'yas Hashem alukim la'adam ulishto kosnos or. Either just make it for them. Vayal bishem. He clothed them. Af ata halbeish arumim. So too should you be actively involved in chesed, in clothing those who are in need. And this, the Gemara then goes on, just like he was mevaker chola, he visited Avram, we should mevaker chola, etc., etc. A few more examples. This is a very, very famous Gemara and the unbelievably important hashkafic idea, which is known as Mahu Avata, just like him, you, Matatio Dei, as they say in Latin, we should imitate Hashem. This is one of the ultimate aspirations of our Hashkafa. And wouldn't you know it, the first example that the Gemara gives, is our Pasuk. So, when you take a step back for that, for a moment, that Gemara already sheds light on this Pasuk, namely, what's going on here is not just a narrative or a sequence of kind of benign or cold events. This is a dramatic and profound act of chesed by Hashem. Chazal see in this a tremendous act of chesed by Hashem to Adam and Chava. And in fact, in keeping with the nicer Midrashim, Ethan and Rav Hirsch's point about Adam's love of Chava despite the sin, Rabbeinu Bachai, also in that same vein, sees Hashem's love for the Adam and Chava, despite the sin which is not rectified. It's not like we have a parallel to what we saw last week in Kitisa and Parshas, right? We read in Shul, where the Jews will do this terrible Avera, and then they have this terrible Tshuva, and Moshe begs Hashem for forgiveness. We don't have that here. They're Omei Bechet'o. And yet Hashem still does the kindness. Says Rabbeinu Bechai, the next source on your sheet, what a testament to the great love that Hashem has for Adam and Chava and for all of us. Ra'oi hu shiomer, so Rabbeinu Bechai again, he's very medactic. He doesn't just give you a pshat, he's not giving you a vertloch. He's telling you pshat and chumash. He says there's something grammatically inconsistent or surprising about this. What should the pasuk have said? Kosnos or lil bosh, that he gave them clothes, for them to dress themselves. But why does it say Vayal Bishem that Hashem clothed them? Because it means literally. Aval Derech Pshat says Rabbeinu Bachai, I'm not giving you any homiletical words. Simple Pashat Pshat Chumash. Rotzeli Yaches Pu'ulas Ahalbosha Eilav Yisbarach. Hashem, the Torah, excuse me, specifically wanted to associate the Pu'ulas Ahalbosha, the act of clothing them, with Hashem. Why? He's not looking for a commission. You know, sometimes you buy something and the guy runs up to the front. My sister, I'm the one who showed it to them. Right? No, that's not what was going on. Rather, it's to teach us something. Horos al ohavaso vechemlaso al yitzurov. To show us the great love and tender kindness that Hashem has for His creations. Sha'afo bishach ato lozaz, even though the Aveira didn't go anywhere, mechavavon, He still loves them and showed them great kindness. And v'hu atzmo hishtadel v'tikunam u'gemilos chasadim. Hashem Himself directly and personally involved in helping them. Right? They're going out into a new world, a colder, harsher world. Right? You send your child out, you say you put on a coat, you got to have, bundle up. And Hashem Himself doesn't just say bundle up, He gets you and puts a scarf on and tucks everything in to make sure Adam and Chava are ready. So Dafke, in light of the sin, you might have thought that Hashem may have tolerated them, but He might have been disgusted and angered with them. Okay, just get out of here. Maybe there was some tough love, He had to kick them out. But it was tough love. It wasn't just arbitrary or mean-spirited punishment. And therefore, He goes out of His way to personally show them that love.
In the past parents or so, references to Hashem are always Hashem Elokim, which shows that balance between Midas HaDin and Midas HaRachamim. And that started when things were going good, when things weren't going so good, and even now. So I think it shows the constancy and consistency of that duality of
Midas HaRachamim. I like that. Just as we saw beforehand, we have the beautiful pshat, and then we have the cold water. So the sforno here is a little bit of the cold water. I love this pshat, especially since I think it's consistent with the Gemara. The Gemara speaks about this as a great chesed, and the Rabbeinu Bachai just deepens our appreciation for the chesed that's in this pasuk. The sforno has a slightly different impression. Not so much that Hashem loved them, but Hashem was worried about the alternative. What would have been the alternative? They would have clothed themselves. Mustama, they would have figured out something, right? They were industrious enough to put on the alei teina. They would have figured out something else. But what would have happened, says the Sforno, pen belavsham acharkach behishtadusam, if they would have done it on their own, ichashvu shehosifu mala, they would have thought that they had added some kind of a mala. They would have thought that that implied some level of superiority or perhaps even divinity that they had. Look, we can clothe ourselves. It shows an independence from Hashem. So, wasn't so much that Hashem loved them so much as He is worried. You know what? I got some rebellious kids over here. They think and do stuff on their own. They already think Hashem Kelukim, right? If I let them not clothe themselves, maybe they're going to get a little too big in their britches. They're going to feel too.
They did have the LA game.
Correct. But now they're ready to go out. Right. So, okay. So again, this is. Again, you have a certain. This is again. I think a certain human psychology. Kaviyakol, according to this, also where you know you have children reach a certain age of independence. So you have to give them that independence. In this case, Hashem forces the independence on them. He's going to kick them out. At the same time, it's like one little honing device. You know, just remember where you came from. Remember you're not totally independent. Because if I would have made you mamish independent, then what do you need me for? Again, it's reminiscent of a, you mentioned that vort from the Kotzke Rebbe, right, about the punishment of the snake. Right, he can eat, he has food wherever he goes, right? The snake is the one creature in all creation that has to worry about eating. So we said that's exactly the point. That wasn't a bracha, that's a punishment. He's so independent, he never needs Hashem. Right? To go through life without realizing you need Hashem is the biggest punishment. So the Sforno, Al Derech Zeh, in a certain similar vein, he's saying Hashem didn't want the Jewish people, the Adam and Chava, to think that they could be too independent. And if they would have clothed themselves, he was worried that they might have gotten to their heads, so to speak. So that's not as lovey-dovey as the Rabbeinu Bachai and the Gemara, but again, it's worth knowing, going to add to the total picture here of the Psukim. Okay. Now, what was the next pasuk that we saw? Where, so now that they're clothed, getting kicked out of the garden, but they got something to wear, says the pasuk Chavez. We weren't sure how to translate this, I told you, right? Hein ha'adam haya ka'achad mimenu ladas tovara. We weren't exactly sure what that meant. So the Eben Ezra has the pshat like I have here in this Chumash. That Hashem that said they are now like one of us. Ebenezer says the Tam HaPasuk, Kamo v'yisem kelukim. First of all, right, Hashem, according to this, when he says us, he's referring to himself and the angels. He's equating them. Says Ebenezer, don't worry, don't get all upset about that. That's not the first time it happened. Right, it happened when Hashem wanted to create Adam to begin with. Right, Nasa, he invites he refers to himself, so to speak, in the equivalent to the angels. That's number one. But more than that, Ebenezer continues, oh, well, people, Shavto, Al titma al milas mimenu ki kamahu naaseh adam b'talmenu. So Eben Ezra basically says, in a subtle kind of way, but what he's getting at is, that's how you, and again, I think the way this Saperstein edition translates the Pasuk, Hashem said, man has become like one of us. Hashem is talking to the angels, he's including himself in this royal we, that we're all, that he has this new knowledge, which, again, is somehow different. If you take a look at Rashi, however, Rashi has a slightly different pshat, which is what I think lends to the stone and otherwise translations. Take a look at Rashi in Pasuk Chafeis, Hayal Ka'achad Mimenu, Harei Hu Yachid, he is now unique, Betachtonim, in the lower world, in the world of humans and animals. K'mo Sh'ani Yachid, like I, not we as in all of us celestial beings, but I, God, am unique, Be'elyonim, even in the world of angels and whatever else is up there in the sky, Hashem is still unique. Adam is unique compared to the lower creatures, as I am unique, Hashem says, compared to the higher creatures. So that's just before we continue Rashi, that's why, in light of this Rashi, that's why they translate it, as you said, right? What does the translation go? He is like the unique one
among us,
right? That is based on this Rashi. I suppose the Eben Ezra doesn't have that. It has a more, I guess, natural, I would think, translation. And what is the unique point? Either way, says Rashi, continues the thought. As the pasuk concludes, "Ladas tovara, ma she'ein kein b'hema b'chaya." This new superior knowledge of "Ladas tovara," Adam has because they ate etadas, Chava has because they ate etadas, and the other animals don't have. Again, I mentioned before that there's really more to do than we did on the etadas, and this pasuk and this Rashi are very central to that larger discussion, not only of what Eitz Hadas meant, was it Bechner Chavshis or something like that, but especially in light of those Mefarshim, like the Ramban, and others who talk about Eitz Hadas being what? The As Tovara, having a free will, choice. So this is a huge issue. I alluded to this before, but again, we never really did this with great justice and comprehensiveness. What does that mean? That until now they didn't have this? So first of all, is that really true, that they didn't have free will beforehand? But more to the point, it seems to be impossible. So they didn't have free choice, then how did they have the choice to sin to begin with? And yet, the Torah, if you understand this to be referring to that, keeps on implying that this is a result of eating. So it becomes very, very complicated. Again, I'm just mentioning it, we're not going to do more than that, but this pasuk certainly is relevant to that, and the machlokes of what the Eitz Hadas means and how to understand this pasuk is part of that. Also, just worth noting, if you take this view of the free will, leave aside how it works out in the Pesukim, the Rambam, in a very, very famous passage in Hilchos Tshuva, cites our pasuk as describing, again, not just what was unique to Adam and Chava, but what is unique for all human history about what it means to be a human being. And if you're familiar with the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, there's 10 prakim, and the fifth, Amish right in the middle, is like a very pivotal transition parak. It's actually no longer about tshuva per se anymore. It's all about bechira chavshis, free will. If you think about it, though, it's not inconsistent at all. On the contrary, the Rambam is teaching us something very profound, that before you, underlying the whole potential, as well as the need, right, you're saying the reverse order, the need, but also the potential for tshuva, underlying both of those, is bechira chavshis. Right? If we didn't have bechira chavshis, there would be no need, we wouldn't do anything wrong. But if we didn't have the choice to do good, we wouldn't be able to rectify either. And so just to read, give you a sense of the flavor of this very important Rambam, where he quotes our pasuk, Rishus l'chol adam nesuna, every human being is given the option, imras l'hatos asmo derachatova, if he wants to focus himself in the direction of the good way, uvio tzadik, harshus b'yodo, any person can do the right thing and be a tzadik. Imras l'hatos asmo derachra, yos rasha, harshus b'yodo, when he wants to go the other direction, it's up to him or her. Remember the underlined part? And that's the pasuk saying, Gusha Kasuv Batara, Hein Ha'adam Hayek Achan Mimenu Ladas Tovara. Quoting our pasuk. Namely, Hein Min Ze Shel Adam Hayayachid Ba'olam. So the Rambam actually has it very different, I think, both in Rashi or Eben Ezra. Not unique among celestial beings, but unique, I guess more like Eben Ezra, I should say. Unique, meaning as opposed to the rest of human or earthly beings. Ain min sheni doma lo bazeh. No other animal creature can do this. Shehei hu me'atzmo b'da'ato u'machshavto yodea hatov hara. Every human being is given the capability on their own to know what's right and wrong. Va'osa kol ma shehu chafetz, and can then do whatever he wants. Ain mi she'akev b'yado mal'asa satov. No one can prevent him from doing the good or the bad. Kevan shekein hu pan yishlach yado. Right? Therefore, we are held responsible or rewarded with responsibility for our actions. Just to conclude, again, we didn't answer all the questions, we wouldn't have time for that, but just to conclude, and we are right up on time actually, the concluding psukim, notwithstanding the apparent redundancy, the concluding psukim talk about Adam and Chava being actually kicked out of the garden and how having this hard work, and also having that interesting phrase of Asher Lukach Misham. So we thought that perhaps it meant earth in general, right? They're going to have to work the earth from which Adam was created. The Radak actually gives a little bit of a different spin on it and actually sees the ground, so to speak, as being not all ground, but something very specific having to do with the sequence. Now we're kind of coming full circle in the history of Adam. Take a look, and we'll conclude with this. The Vod Esa Adama says the Radak, when they're kicked out of Gan Eden, now they're going to have to work the field. Kevin Shaloi Ratza Ba'avoda Kala. Right? He wasn't satisfied with having a cushy job, being in Gan Eden, the Yosef began, if he would have stayed in the garden, he could have worked and done all this stuff without any great effort. But Avra Mitzvah, instead he violated the one commandment he had, and therefore as a result, Yosef Chutz Lagan, he has to go out of the garden. Avod Es Hadama, he has to work the land, Avodah Kosheh, hard work, continues the Pasuk. Asher lukach misham, this ground where he was taken from, says the Radak, Hamakom asher lukach misham, the place where he literally was taken, not when he was created, when he was literally transported. Kesheh yivyu l'gan Eden. Remember, we saw the pasuk had said Vayita Adam v'gan, and we said the Mefarshim said what happened when Adam was not born in the Gan. Adam was born somewhere else, and Hashem thought to bring him into the garden. What happened? Right, he got his one shot, and he messed up. So Hashem sends him back out. Asher lukach misham. Where you came, right? It's like the old song, which I actually lived down the block from that building. Moving on up. And that's a real building, for the record. 82nd and 3rd on the east side of Manhattan. The building is still the language. It should be well. That's from the Jeffersons, the famous, famous great TV show. Jefferson, they used to show a building there from the building, moving on up. That's 82nd and 3rd. I lived right on the corner. I live on 82nd between 2nd and 3rd. So, right, you go to the new neighborhood, and maybe you're not ready for it. Right? So Adam was put in the new neighborhood. He wasn't ready for it. So what's the result? Go back. Go back to where you come from. And he's like brought back to the neighborhood. Namely, when he was outside the garden, he was brought in. As for the Radak, it's full circle. He's been brought out. No, it says the Mekedem is this
Shekruvim.
I don't know.
And now this, it says east of the Gan Eden.
No, that's the Kruvim, though. I think that's the Kruvim.
So he's further east.
I think that's the Kruvim. Right? It says, Vayashken Mekedem LeGan Eden at the Kruvim. Plus, but anyway, even that notwithstanding, the Radak's point is not, you know, where he was in Asia and now he'll be in North America, right? Or, you know, the point is he's out of the garden. And again, it's not just stomp, but it's poetic. It's full circle. He was out, he had his chance at the big time, and he blew it. It's a bitter pill to swallow, right? Again, you imagine this. This comes up in literature and other things all the time. Not even, you know, not just in pop culture, in high culture too. It's like a classic theme of the biggest fear that people who make it out of the ghetto or make it up is that they don't want to have to go back. Right? They fight tooth and nail to get out, and then they fight even harder. By the way, the greatest, most painful thing for somebody in these kind of circumstances is to have to go back. That's what they thought they had escaped. So that's the poignancy Adam had, so to speak, not through his own effort necessarily, but through the bracha of Hashem, had escaped what would have been his fate. And he had a taste of the good life.
This Adam was referring to the Gan Eden.
No, which part? No, La'avodas Adam. No, Asher Lokach Misham. He's taken the rest of the world. If he had been somewhere else, then he got taken to Gan Eden, and now he's getting kicked out. And it's not Stam getting kicked out. That's bad enough. He's getting kicked out to what he thought he had escaped from. going back to where he started.
Back to his roots.
And again, and there's something particularly tragic about that.
Taking from Gan Eden
for that is
which is the theme of tonight here, homiletics.
Is the fact that, you know, the Medrash said that part of him, of the
from different
was from the, you know, the high...
Well,